They respond, did not have Io.
Didn't.
Once again, we have it on camera.
Did not have.
We can see.
Oh.
With.
Like we can footage. See. We just like, watched the footage together.
You know that we can see you.
Like, now we go.
We got the tea and a theory. We got the tea and a theory. We got the tea. What? And a theory. We got the tea and a theory.
Is this thing on?
Woohoo!
And we're back.
We're back. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Tea and Theory, where we will spill the tea and back it up with a theory. Okay, we are your host, Cassan.
And I'm Quenisha.
Whew. And so let's get into it, girl. Mm-hmm. How are you doing?
You know, I am pretty good today. Yeah. Although, and I think I'm good because I let myself lay down yesterday. Have a day where I did nothing, and then I had to do the things today.
Yeah.
But it's okay because I had some time to rest.
Yeah.
And that's what I needed. So I'm feeling good today.
Good.
How are you doing?
I am feeling okay.
Okay.
I had to find it.
Yeah, it took you that long?
Yeah, it does.
I'm finding it. It take you that long to
find it? It does. Mm-hmm. But it's like, because like, I feel okay, but I'm like, I feel like the word okay is just like a,
yeah,
like a, what is that word for like, just a response, like an automatic response?
Okay,
maybe?
Yes.
So I was trying to see if there's anything else, but I feel okay. I feel good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, once again, I feel very present, ready to get into the tea and the theory.
Okay. Yes.
So, usually we would then transition into our icon of the week,
mm-hmm.
But we wanted to just make some space to just remember some people this week. So starting with Rolling Ray, who was a 28-year-old influencer, social media personality, community and disabilities advocate from Washington, D.C., who passed away earlier this month, I believe on September 3rd, a few days away from his actual like 29th birthday, which is really sad. And so personally for me, I remember him like for his humor, you know, like all the iconic lines, like purr, like things that are a part of my lexicon and I'm sure like are a part of everybody else's lexicon, even if you don't know, like,
just pick it up.
Yeah. Like, her name is Miss Toller. She's not a girl. Yeah. Like, or he was like, I just came back from the dead and they told me you still not that girl. An icon, right? And so like, wow. So just very influential, but I think even beyond like his humor and his very big personality, like he was an advocate, right? So I remember like during the big protests against police brutality during 2020, like I remember him being on the front lines and he brought kind of the advocacy with that humor. He was outside, okay? Like, and he's just always been somebody who's been able to like do all these things. So definitely wanted to make space to remember Rolling Ray, the icon that you are.
Yes.
Shout out to Rolling Ray.
Yes. Rest in peace, Rolling Ray.
Rest in peace. Yes. Mm. And also, there was a 21-year-old student at Delta State University in Cleveland, Mississippi, who was found hanging on his campus, named Damar Travion, also known as Trey Reed. And there have been a lot of kind of conflicting reports about what happened to him, what is happening to him. But I think the implications are there, right? This is a Black man found hanging on a campus.
On a campus.
Right. And so rest in peace. I mean, I was reading through kind of the way his parents and family members kind of talked about him being very like soft-spoken, but still being such a like light. And so hoping that despite like what has happened to him, like we're able to still remember him as, you know, a light, He was so many things to so many people. Mm-hmm. And so in this time of grief, I hope that his family are given the answers that they're looking for.
Yes.
I hope that they're able to put their loved one to rest, and get the justice that they deserve. But yeah, just wanting to kind of remember and make space for kind of some of the forces that have left us.
Yes. No, I'm glad that we took time to add in this segment.
Yeah.
Because it's not always that we get time to slow down like that, mm-hmm. and really just kind of remember people for who they were,
yeah.
and not how they left us.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree. And so, yeah, if you have a moment, you know, just thinking about, like, because I feel like sometimes we consume these people,
yes.
but we don't really take time to really, yeah, like, think about them as humans, like, uh-huh. you know, beyond the things that they become known for. So, yeah. Remember them as people who had lives and people who loved them, some of them including us.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's well said.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes. So I'm going to transition us now. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to jump into our icon of the week. And that is for this week, Tramell Tillman. So I don't know if y'all watch the show Severance. I love the show Severance. I have watched every single episode.
Wait, hold on. Making space for the people who don't like have Apple TV and who only watched one episode, but still felt his impact. Amen.
Thank you. Yes, yes. Making space for those individuals as well. Honestly, yes. I didn't pay for Apple TV. I got fortunate that I kept getting the little like free Apple TV things from Best Buy. I don't know how, but
I couldn't give all the girls all the money.
Yeah,
somebody had to get left behind. I'm sorry. But shout out Tramell.
But yes, anyway, shout out Tramell. Mm-hmm. He is, and the reason he is our icon of the week this week is because he is not the first Black man, but he is the first Black person, an openly gay person, to win an Emmy for Outstanding Supporting Actor in a Drama Series for his work in Severance, which is crazy.
No, like, first is in this big
in 2025. Jimmy
Vincent, this big 2025. First Black. Mind you, the world has been spinning for how long? The Earth has been spinning for how long?
And the Emmys have been going on for how long?
And first Black?
First.
I'd be ashamed.
If I
was, you know what I mean? Like, if I was the Emmys, I'd be like,
you know, like, oh, so we're just now getting around to this?
Now we just got around to y'all.
Like, that's how it feels. Like,
And it's not even like, and it's not even to say like the Black actors who have been in supporting roles haven't been eating down.
Yeah, because you can't even say that.
You can't even, and if you do say that, you're a liar. And nobody likes a
big lie.
You could be a hater, but you cannot be a liar. You
cannot be a liar.
You cannot be a liar. Mm-hmm. You want to tell me Black people haven't been acting down?
In supporting and lead roles. So
supporting lead. Behind the camera, hello, writing this. Exactly. Ryan Coogler, I'm speaking to you, but anyways, this is about your math. But like, everybody, every girl, uh-huh. the people who bring the food, you mean to tell me Black people ain't been eating down from top to bottom? You're lying. So first Black is crazy.
It's so wild, but if you-
Still iconic.
It's still iconic. And if you saw Severance, you would know, and I'm not-
Damn!
This is no.
Shade on the couch is crazy. Shade on the couch is crazy. Mind you, your sister.
This is not shade. I was building up to something.
Okay, you're right.
I've been trying to get her to watch Severance. I'm going to sign her in and she is going to watch Severance.
Thank God. I was to the point where you were like, here's the password.
Yes.
So you can be a part of it.
I need you to see these scenes that I'm going to talk about. Because Tramell Tillman plays the character Mr. Milchick, and he is the floor manager for the severed floor.
Yeah.
And what we see is really this amazing performance of him in this role as someone that we see as an antagonist, but you're still rooting for him. You know, like, so
yeah.
you doing the stuff you really ain't supposed to be doing, but
like,
still like you. Yeah. And so what we really get to see, though, is how his blackness shows up in these subtle moments and how he brings that to life with his character.
Okay.
There's one scene with another coworker at this place called, or her name is, she's a black woman named Natalie.
Mm-hmm.
And he receives a gift from their, like their higher ups, their founders.
Yeah.
It's a portrait
Of
the founder, but it's painted in Mr. Milchick's likeness. And so you see this black man that has, you know, these blue eyes, and he's looking at it and he's just like, what on earth did they just give me? And the thing is Natalie always has this headset in her ears. And So she's always talking to whoever her boss is. And that's The person that's kind of really in charge.
Okay.
And so they kind of exchange looks that let you know that they're both like, yeah, this is
kind of crazy.
This is kind of crazy. This is a hot mess, but she's also kind of smiling through it, like, yeah. But it's this painful smile.
It's very much, they're paying me.
Yeah. And it's this exchange that really, like, as a black person, you see it and you're like, I know exactly everything that they just said.
It's so crazy. I mean, you look at the black person in the room like,
Yeah. And so we see it in that scene, but then we also see it in this latest season where on the severed floor, they're getting towards the end of a project they've been working on.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a celebration that happens.
Yeah.
And so he is the drum major.
I saw that on Twitter.
It's so good. He's the drum major. And I mean, that band was eating it up. I don't know what floor they work on. They work on like some performance floor, music floor in the building. And that's all they do. And you could tell that's what they eat, sleep.
Yeah.
Because they was eating it up. But it really highlights, it felt like a love letter to really those HBCU fans.
Oh, yeah.
And also to his alma mater of Jackson State.
Word.
So fellow HBCU king. But the way he brings his character to life is just it's so amazing to see. It's so amazing to see how he highlights his blackness throughout, but he's still this character that you kind of love to like hate to love, like, but you still love him.
Like you're kind of terrible.
Exactly. Yeah, you're kind of terrible, but I still love you and I still want to see you on my screen.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited to see what he does in this next season whenever it comes out. Yeah. And he continues his work. But shout out to you.
Yay!
Tramell Tillman. You did that.
You did do that. Mm-hmm. And that's why they gave you that shiny thing.
And
but even if they hadn't given it to you,
you still deserve
it. You got our icon of the week.
That means
something.
It does.
Yes.
It does.
Shout out to
Tramell Tillman.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, okay. Getting into the topic in a big room.
I'm seated.
I'm seated too, Jeff. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we have to get into this interview with Andrew Garfield, Julia Roberts, and one of my faves, Ayo Debray.
Love her down.
Now, so they're in Italy?
I believe so.
Italy.
I believe so.
For their movie After the Hunt.
Mm-hmm.
As they would say in Italian, it's actually titled, I don't know.
I'm lying.
I don't know.
I'm like,
I'm lying. Ooh, I just said you shouldn't lie. I'm sorry. But so they're doing an interview with interviewer who is seated in front of Andrew Garfield, Julia Roberts, and Ayo Debray.
Okay, so all three.
So all three of them, and like all three people are visible.
Okay.
And there's also a camera in the room. Okay. So we're seeing what the journalist or interviewer
is seeing.
Or really random person at this point, because I feel like journalists, interviewers, I feel like there's a little bit of education, but it was a little, it was missing a little.
Okay.
For what this person went on to do. So I'll say it again, all three people, right? There are three people, Andrew, Julia, and Ayo. They're all visible. We as the viewer can see them too.
Yeah.
So then this person behind the glasses, and you'll get why I say that, asks a question to the three people in front of her and then says, "For you two," referring only to Andrew and Julia.
Well, okay.
But you know what? We're going to watch it all together.
Yeah.
So y'all understand what we're talking about. Shall we?
Mm-hmm. We shall.
What we lost during the politically correct era, and when what we have to expect in Hollywood after the Me Too movement and the Black Lives Matter are done. The two of you, Andrew and Julia.
Okay. Well, okay.
Can you repeat that? And I can, with your sunglasses on, I can't tell which of us you're talking to. So,
so the question was for Julia and Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
Now that the Me Too era and the Black Lives Matter are done, what we have to expect in Hollywood, and what we lost, if we lost something, with the politically correct era.
Well, it's I know that's not for me, and I don't know if it's purposeful, if it's not. I just am curious. I don't think it's done.
It's not done.
I don't think it's done at all. I think maybe hashtags might not be used as much, but I do think that there's work being done by activists, by people every day. That's beautiful, important work that's not finished. That's really, really, really active. Mm-hmm. For a reason, because this world is really charged.
Yeah.
And that work isn't finished at all. Maybe if there's like not mainstream coverage in the way that there might have been
daily headlines
yeah. in the way that it might have been
mm-hmm.
8 or so years ago. But I don't think that it means that the work is done.
Mm-hmm.
That's what
and,
I would
and
say.
And the movements have been halted anyway.
Yes.
Like the movements are still absolutely alive,
yes.
as you say, just maybe not as
labeled or covered.
Yeah, or like
yeah.
witnessed as much.
So not only did you tell them people, the two of you, once, you said it twice, and then you went on to say, just in case there was confusion, Andrew and Julia.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Are there not three
there
people in the room?
There were not three people. And mind you, you ignored the only Black woman in the room that would fall under both Me Too and the Black Lives Matter movement.
Like, you see how intersectionality just shows up?
It just
sometimes it doesn't even want to. And then it's like literally on vacation, oh. and then it gets a call and it's kind of like, oh, okay.
Yep. Here I go.
Up.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's one person in this room who is both Black and both and woman,
uh-huh.
but we don't want to hear from you.
No.
What?
No.
So, first of all, the part, okay, we in a tea right now.
Yeah.
The tea for me was when Julia was like, okay, so these glasses you got on the inside of this room, we cannot tell who you're talking to.
It really brought me back to like when you're driving, right? And you're lost and you're like, I can't tell where I'm going. I need to turn the radio.
Yeah,
down.
Like,
babes, I can't understand what you're saying with these glasses on. You need to take them off.
Like, who? And I also feel like it was very much like Julia trying to be like,
yes,
this is me giving you the opportunity to like
to try again. Fix it.
Try again.
Fix
like
it, babe.
Let's run this back. Right.
Exactly.
And the lady said, so just in case you didn't hear me,
uh-huh.
we don't know she took off the glasses, but said, just in case you didn't hear me,
mm-hmm.
Andrew, Julia,
you too. Yeah. You too.
Mm-hmm. And so I think one thing that I liked
mm-hmm.
was Ayo being like, I don't know if this was on purpose.
Uh-huh.
You know, this exclusion of me.
Yes.
But I'll answer the question. And then the two of them allowing her to do so.
Uh-huh. And even when it was initially asked,
yeah.
the way that Andrew Garfield immediately
yeah.
turned and was like,
she can't be talking to me.
It can't be me.
Yeah. If, yeah, now that you made me think about it, why wouldn't it be two Julia and Ayo?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
But
oh,
on Twitter,
well,
they done even added to it even more because, you know, it went viral and this, that, and the fourth. So then on TikTok, they like, so the person who asked the question posts it on TikTok. And so one person questioned, why is Ayo cropped out?
I'm sorry, huh?
And then they responded, the person who asked the question, who just like us, could see in front of them.
Yeah, that there were three people, three individuals.
And even, and you know what? I'll say this. We don't even know if this person could, we're not going to speak, right?
Yes.
But you didn't hear three voices in the room. They didn't tell you that you had three people in the room.
Because that's what a professional interview does. You know who you're interviewing. And usually, it's not going to be the surprise.
Yeah, right.
You got to prepare.
Yeah, you do have to prepare.
Uh-huh.
And the movie is like, okay, anyway.
Uh-huh.
So yep. Then, and beyond that, we're talking about you posting this individually on your TikTok or whatever. So somebody had questions, why is Ayo cropped out? They respond, did not have Ayo.
Did
once again, we have it on camera.
Did not have.
We can see.
Oh.
With.
Like we can footage. See. We just like, watched the footage together.
Do you know that we can see you?
As a collective.
Do you know that we can see you?
Apparently not.
So then they respond back with a screen cap with all three of them sitting together. And they respond, who is this sitting next to Julia then? And that's where that
yeah.
Ends. Mm-hmm. But like, once again, do you know that we can see you?
Do you know that we could see you?
So, Diva, we're
okay. So we just, you know, I don't even like, I feel like at this point, you know, the interview, she like, it was like, she did what she did, right?
Yeah.
Then she doubled down whenever she was like, I'm gonna repeat myself.
That I repeat. So just to be clear.
And then this is like time number three.
Yeah, you tripled down.
Okay. Yeah, uh-huh. And then I did hear that there was time number four too, weren't there?
Okay. Just who keeps asking her questions? Stop talking to this lady. Just let's all stop talking to her.
At this point.
Let's stop talking to her. Guys.
What?
Yeah, no.
Who gave her the opportunity to quadruple down? Literally the opportunity to quadruple down. She had the option to, you know, admit
yes.
that what she did was like, yeah, I could have phrased this better.
Yeah.
Maybe I could have said this differently, or maybe, yeah, maybe I was wrong.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's okay to say yeah, I was wrong. Yeah, Amy, I messed like, up.
Yeah.
But no, when they, you know, asked her like, okay, well, why didn't you ask her the question? Why didn't you direct this question to the one Black woman in the room? She was like, y'all are focusing too much on this one thing and you're missing the actual content in the interview. You're missing what I actually was, what we were doing. No, I think they got the point.
So the content was the one that you tried to make not happen.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
But anyway, we ain't here to.
But anyway,
we ain't here to talk about you, Queenie. Just you. Yeah. That's the guy.
And
it ain't even just you.
It ain't even just you.
Because I feel like this speaks to kind of like Black women's invisibility.
Uh-huh.
Right. And it's not that Black women don't want to be seen, but like we are just erased.
Somehow we are just erased. And in so many different ways.
Yeah.
Because we think about how we watched her erase Ayo with our own eyes and ignoring her and not asking her that question. But then we'll see it in everyday life where students are being college students are being excluded from groups that they're working in.
Mm-hmm.
People are not citing Black women in research and they're using somebody else's research, or they're just not citing them. They're just claiming it as their own.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of which, not to take you off your train.
Oh, no, this is great.
I saw an article the other day talking about the superwoman schema and applied it to every woman.
I'm sorry.
I said, I guess we don't need the foundation.
But isn't, and this is what we're talking about.
This is what we're talking
things
about.
Things that are created for us, things that we create, we get pushed out.
Yeah.
And this will come into play a little bit later when we're talking, but I'm thinking about that video that was going around on TikTok of Miss Rave Pilates by Raven, that and where she she's talking about how Pilates, basically equating Pilates and it needing to be expensive, and because it's expensive, it's not gonna be diverse, because and comparing it to Bottega. Mind you,
it's just exercise.
It's just exercise. None of these things go together. But the root of it was completely lost in everything that she was saying, because Pilates was created by a man that was in an internment camp. And then the two women that he trained and actually certified in Pilates were women of color.
Yep.
With one woman being a Black woman who is credited for popularizing it.
Yep.
In the United States. She is the reason it has spread like it has. And it was created to be accessible.
Yep.
And something that we could access, but by giving into this definition of, oh, it's not going to be diverse because it's expensive, it's exclusive, and we want it to be exclusive, that's erasing her and her contributions to this.
And I'll add in names so
Thank
we can kind of give them credit, right? So the founder is Joseph Pilates, which is such a cute name, not relevant. And the pivotal figure that you're talking about, the Black woman, is Kathy Stanford Grant.
Yes.
Who kind of helped him popularize, like you said, in the United States, popularize Pilates in the United States and make it more inclusive. Like, that's the foundation of Pilates, that's to make it, to help people move their bodies and be healthy. Which I feel like is so funny, because I feel like the whole argument, and this is like the biggest tangent, but the whole argument behind, like, you know, exercise is like, people need to get in the gym. Like, people need to be healthy. Like, everyone just, like, if you're this and that, like, you need to get in the gym. So all of a sudden now we shouldn't?
No.
Now these things shouldn't be? Now it's not about health?
No.
Now it's about, like,
check your credit at the door.
Yeah. Yeah, they checking credit cards at the door, girl. They checking purses.
What is bag your credit score, baby?
What bag is that? That's not a brand.
You can't come in.
You cannot come in here. I thought it was about movement and being healthy.
And being healthy in community.
In
with
community.
One another.
So we can hold each other accountable and get healthy together and, like, you know, build connection. I thought.
But no.
Oh.
No.
But apparently it's like a trip to Bottega.
Yeah, so exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But that's what happens when Black women are getting erased from these different spaces and these different places.
Yeah. And I think about, like, invisibility and Black women being made to be invisible. How does that happen? Right. And so I kind of peeked into, like, a lot of prototyping and intersectional invisibility research. Right. And so in 2013, Gavani and Peplau. So they hypothesized that Black women are often rendered invisible as a result of being marginalized for being both Black and women, right? And so Perdee and Ibach in 2008 also kind of talk about this with intersectional invisibility. And so with that is kind of, it happens because of, like, prototyping, right? So what is the first thing that kind of comes to your mind, right? What is the first iteration of Blackness, right? And so what they found in the research is that a lot of people associate Blackness with masculinity, right? So immediately when we think of Black, we think of Black men. And then when we think about women, immediately, like, we go to white women, right? They are the prototype, or they are the kind of standard for femininity and what it means to be a woman, right? And so what happens to people like Black women who are at the intersection of those things, right? Who aren't the first thing that you think of, right? So here comes that invisibility, right? It's kind of like, we just don't immediately think of you. And so, girl, you're not in here.
You ain't here.
Like, and so it makes it easier for folks to then erase them. And I feel like that showed up in the room. There wasn't a Black man in the room, but I'm talking about, like, the Me Too movement. So I'm looking at the woman.
Yeah.
right? And I'm also looking at the white man because he's a part of it too. He's on the other side. Yeah. But then it was kind of like, okay, so then who were you asking about the Black Lives Matter movement?
It's like, how do y'all feel having witnessed this thing? Because sometimes I think when we have these movements, they're able to take people that are on the outside and like, well, what do you feel?
Yeah.
Having been a witness and kind of seeing this from the outside, not really being a part of it.
Yeah.
So it's like, I feel like they recognize that they're not a part of that in any physical way of like, this is a part of my being. I'm a Black person.
Right.
But like, you're a witness to this thing. And so I feel like you're credible enough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also it's like, well, my prime example of what Black isn't in the room. So I guess y'all answer.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But what about the person who is at this intersection who would have been able to experience both of those things, mm-hmm. right? How that intersectional invisibility like impacted Ayo. Like we got to see that firsthand. And I think about, like how messed up that is, right? Because it's not like Ayo didn't make her presence known. It was that she was literally silenced.
She was literally silenced.
What did Oprah say? Were you silent or were you silenced?
Were you silent or were you silenced?
Okay. So like, so that's immediately what I thought of, like the intersectional invisibility that happened there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so further than that, I think about like beyond Ayo's experience that we got to witness, like what other ways have I seen this impact? And so I saw this crazy stat that literally made me stop in my tracks.
Yeah.
And it was that approximately between February and April 2025, approximately 300,000 Black women were laid off in huge numbers.
I'm sorry, how many?
300,000. So that's not just like three zeros. That's say that's five zeros and then a three in front of it. And so 300,000.
Okay. That's insane.
Like,
because in that short period of time, like we're not talking over years and years and years.
No.
We're
that's February, March, and April.
That's three months.
Is that 100,000 per month?
At this point.
Right. And this is not to say that this is because, you know, Black women just suck. And so, girl, get out this workforce. That's not what it is at all. Right. This is a direct impact of kind of the federal policy changes and the downsizing from the current administration. And so with that, they've impacted the direct sectors that Black women enter the most, mm-hmm. right? And so when we think about kind of invisibility, who is it easier to erase and get rid of, right? In our last episode, we talked a lot about dehumanization and how a lot of times Black women are kind of at the center of that dehumanization, right? And so when we think about dehumanization, how much easier it is for people to then, because we don't see them as human, be invisible, how easier it is for us to erase them and care less about them.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can lay them off.
Yeah, because whenever you were saying this, I think the word justify came to my mind of mm-hmm. like how easy it is for us to justify. But the thing is they don't have to justify it. Nobody's coming on in interviews and saying like, oh yeah, well we did this because of it. No, these policies were passed and they got rid of the Black women. And we see the ripple effects because they targeted government, a sector that Black women often enter into. And that's one of the first places where Black women could enter the workforce that was outside of doing some of the more domestic work, like when we would see housekeepers and maids.
Mm-hmm.
But we also see them targeting like the DEI pieces, mm-hmm. which we've seen in our work.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen the direct impacts of that in research and in higher ed and what that's looked like, seeing whole departments just get eliminated.
Yep. And so I am here citing the work from Katika Roy, Who is an economist, right? Who quoted these, who kind of reflected on these numbers. And so, like you said, the agencies that were impacted the most were Department of Education and Department of Health and Human Services. So like, these are places in the public sector that like Black women have kind of been able to hold on to in like kind of middle-class employment and kind of pull up, you know, kind of climb up, and so to see them kind of taken, lose these jobs, it's not a reflection of them doing bad work. And Katika Roy goes on to talk about this a little bit more in when she talks about the economic fallout, right? Because these are not just consequences for Black women. Like, this is, I feel like this is low-key like good news, because if we must suffer, y'all come on in the room. Yeah, let's sit together, right? And so she quotes how every one drop in women's labor force participation caused the U.S. economy an estimated $146 billion in lost GDP.
And what do we learn in class about racism? It costs everybody.
It costs everybody.
It literally will hit your pocket.
To the tune of an estimated $146 billion.
Jeff.
And that's per 1 point drop. So...
And ain't we in debt?
Don't we?
We are so bad.
We know. We owe everybody money. The government owe me money. And I owe it money.
At this point. So it's like, at this point, don't we need every little point we can get?
We literally... So the fact that like, we've decided, or not we,
no, minus,
it was not
we didn't do this.
That people have decided to kind of erase Black women despite the impact it will have for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And I love this part of her article. She said, to put it simply, when Black women are pushed out of the labor force, we all lose.
We all lose.
So,
like, baby, come on down here with me.
No, literally, come on down.
We in this together.
We're all in this together.
Yeah. At this point.
We all lose.
Uh-huh.
But then in the article, she then goes on to say, like, you know, there's good news, you know, it's the result of policy choices. And so it can be undone by better ones. And so feel free to go read into that. She talks about restoring and protecting public sector roles and reinstating and strengthening DEI programs, because it appears that they're here for a reason.
They actually did help.
Yeah.
They did something.
That yeah. Supposed to do. Right. Building inclusive pathways into tech and innovation so that Black women can get more access into it. Cause y'all know we be tearing it up. Like, come on now. And so on and so forth. Right. But yeah, I feel like we are seeing that impact of what invisibility can do. It can just make it so easy to erase Black women who are so necessary and impactful.
Yes.
And this is not, and like, yeah, like we're just impactful. We're needed.
Yes.
Right? Like, and we see that in, and it's, I don't want to make it seem like we're only beneficial because we cost money and we bring something to the economy, but that's only one of the aspects that we support this country.
Yes.
That's just the one.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want me to get into the novelty that Black women have brought to research and to culture and to food and to music and to this and to that.
You better tell them.
But this is just one of the ways, like, and even going back to like the interview with Ayo, like that response.
Yes.
Right. That was so like valuable. And it was a great response to a question that wasn't posed to her.
Mm-hmm.
But like thinking about like how in that, that's like a micro, like a reflection of like the bigger issue or the bigger picture.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And it's playing out right there in front of us.
Right in front of us.
We all saw it.
We did, because it was on camera.
On camera. Chad.
And then to quadruple down. Y'all missing a point. No, you missed a point.
No, you missed a point.
He's talking about y'all missing a point. Girl, you missed a point. So, child.
Yes.
Try it again.
And try it again because. Mm-mm.
I just. Girl. So, yeah. So, those are my thoughts on, you know, Black women and how they're made invisible.
Yes. And it's something that we can all really relate to.
Yeah.
Like, there are different times where we felt invisible, where we've been, like, I can't tell you the amount of times where I can be walking around campus, down the street, anywhere.
Yeah.
And I am 5'7" for reference. I'm 5'7". And I can be walking around and the person can be looking up, not looking at their phone, and will almost walk into me. It has happened so many times, like, to the point where I'm just like, I'm not going to move.
Yeah.
I'm not going to move. Because if you're going to act like you don't see me, two can tangle. Takes two to tangle and two can play this game.
Yeah.
Because I shouldn't always have to be the one to accommodate. I shouldn't have to always be the one because I've been rendered invisible for whatever reason. Yeah. But we, like I said before, we also think about how this shows up in a classroom, in the thesis that I did. So my thesis was on Black student belonging, factors that contribute to a sense of belonging at both a predominantly white institution and a minority serving institution. And something that the students would share and something that we would find is that there were many times where they would be in classes with white students and the students, like when it was time to choose their groups, they would be left out. Mm-hmm. Or if they were assigned groups, they would act as if they didn't hear them when they were speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Or they would ignore suggestions that they would give or just ignore them completely. Like act like their presence wasn't there. They weren't smart enough. They weren't intelligent enough. And so it shows up in so many different settings that we walk into. This has been talked about in the work setting and how Black women can be at their desk. They can be at work and they're not being seen.
Yeah.
They're not being recognized. Their work ethic isn't being recognized. They're being passed over because again, they're being rendered invisible.
Yeah.
It shows up in so many different places.
Yeah. It also makes me think of like an experience that I've had like at work where there was, so I had kind of like a, so, hold on, I'm trying to find the words. The words are leaving me.
Okay,
but it's like, wait, actually, hold on. My brain. First of all, you better cite your research.
Period.
But it made me think about this experience that I've had or like, yeah, that was like, that would happen and I would just notice it that I thought was so interesting. But it would be like at a place of work where like I had a boss who wasn't my direct boss, but like he was one of the big players and like it would be me and I had a counterpart who was kind of a I think kind of my age mate white woman right, and so when he would talk or try to address us because we had similar roles, he would just look at her like he would never, and I would be like intentional about being like because like I'm here too, and you, like we have the same role, so you're addressing the both of us. And he would just look directly at her, and so then I would have to be like, "I'll answer your question." Very similar to what Ayo did, and obviously I couldn't be like, "So I feel like you know you leaving me out and da da da." Unfortunately, despite her doing it very well, but it, you know, because a part of it is like in Ayo's experience, it was very overt, and it was kind of like, "So you've genuinely excluded, like all of us heard you exclude me with like looking at me." I can't be like, "Well, you're not looking at me, right?" Because then it can become like, "Oh, well, she's aggressive and she's this," and this is not something that everyone in the room can notice, right? But this is something that I notice, right? Because I would look at his eyes and his eyes would be looking directly past me.
Wow.
And so I was like, "Hey, like I have an answer.
Like I'm here to, I can contribute.
I promise I have an answer. I can, I have knowledge. I'm smart. I promise. There's a reason
I'm here.
There is a reason that I'm at this table."
Exactly.
And so it was just for me, like, I relate a lot to like what Ayo experienced because like, yeah, it will be something as simple as like phrasing a question and deliberately excluding you out of it, or it'll just be, I won't even make eye contact with you. Mm-hmm. And like, how does, and I'll say for me, like, I will have to kind of tell myself, like, girl, it is not that big of a deal. You know, you're here, just you was in a meeting, girl, and that's it. Like, let's just move forward. Like, he's not even your boss. Let's just move forward. But realistically, it is impactful. Because I've sat and been like, dang, like, why is he not looking at me either? I you know that I'm serving in this role as well. Exactly. So why wouldn't you look at me too?
Exactly. It's like, you know I'm here.
You know I'm a here. Person.
Like, I'm literally a person that is sitting in front of you, that's interacting with you.
I'm sitting the closest to you.
And you probably hired me.
Yeah.
So you know that I'm here. And it does hurt.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like I get into my very super woman, strong Black woman, because that is what that is for.
Yeah.
Dr. Woods is going to say. But, like, I get into that because I'm like, you know what? I'm not even going to let that bother me.
Mm-hmm.
Her, I know we do.
I'm
in the room, please.
Exactly, because even though that can be so helpful for us in the moment to be like, I'm not gonna let it bother me.
Yeah,
it's like you still feel it.
Like, dang, like
it's like, so we not. I'm not important. Yeah. So that makes me think about a different type of instance of invisibility that I experienced in my master's.
Mm.
So I was in my last year, I was finishing my master's. I was on internship, and the place that I was working, my boss, working with her. And this is when I really started to develop or realize, I don't want to say develop because it's always been there, but it's when I really started to realize that I want to do research with Black women. Yeah. I love clinical work with Black women. Yeah. That's where I really was like, this is who I'm becoming. This is who I want to be. And this is where I'm going.
Yeah.
And I remember I shared that with my supervisor in a supervision that we had. And I remember getting shut down so hard. I was taken aback because I had felt invisible in our other sessions, because sometimes we would do didactic, which means that we would there would be multiple supervisees in a session, and it never really felt like my issues were important. I would say like, hey, I'm needing some support here, or I'm having a hard time, or I need some advice on this client. And it was just like what I was saying wasn't mattering.
Yeah.
It wasn't that important. Yeah. And when we got to this meeting where I'm sharing like, oh yeah, I'm really passionate about doing research with Black women, I kind of want to see what that's about.
Yeah.
And she was just like, who's going to read that?
Wow. Yeah.
And in that moment, I felt crushed.
Yeah.
I felt absolutely crushed, because what do you mean, who's going to read that?
Yeah.
Because not only are you telling me that this area that I'm interested in, and nobody's gonna think that's important because it's Black women.
Yeah.
Nobody's gonna think that's important. But it's also speaking to me in that moment of, I've been sitting across from you for months.
Yeah.
At this point, is that what you think about me?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you feel about me, that my being isn't important?
Yep.
That I'm not important enough for someone to need to research, for someone to need to understand, for someone to have an interest in wanting to work towards our wellness.
Yeah.
And so I think that's something that's always sat with me of like, even though in that instance, her and I, we were having a conversation together.
Yep.
But it's like the words were just evaporating.
Yeah.
They were not being heard by her. They were going in one ear and out the other. They didn't matter.
Yeah.
Because her view and vision of Black women, she didn't see our wholeness. She didn't see the support that we needed, because y'all are strong.
You gotta go.
Y'all are strong Black women. Y'all have real friends.
Yeah.
Y'all go to church. And that's the things that we hear all the time.
Yeah.
As Black women, our problems getting erased. Mm-hmm. Because you're strong, y'all are fine, y'all go to church, y'all do everything you're supposed to be doing. Why would you need some help?
Yeah.
Why do you need help? Girl, y'all are fine.
Yeah.
We don't see, Ain't nothing wrong with you.
Ain't nothing wrong with you.
Ain't nothing wrong with you. Y'all always doing everything for yourself.
Yeah.
Y'all don't need no man. Y'all don't need no help.
Meanwhile, when they finally got around to studying Black women, they were like, so you're actually leading in all the worst outcomes.
Literally.
Okay.
So health.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So you aren't doing great.
You are not doing great. But are you sure? Y'all strong? You don't show it. You wear your pain so well.
Yeah, but isn't that like the whole point behind it being important to study Black women so we get to the room?
Exactly. That's literally the point.
Yeah.
But even our feelings, our experiences of how we're experiencing moments of erasure.
Yeah.
Are getting erased.
Girl, give me that eraser.
Look, like, y'all hear me.
Too much now.
Y'all hear me.
Yeah, they have that, like, please. Yeah, like, and I feel like the part that stands out the most to me is when you said, like, I was standing in front of her and she literally just erased me.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And mind you, she's actively engaging with you.
Actively engaging. And it still happens. And it takes us back to that interview.
Yep.
You are actively seeing this person.
If you didn't see me, you heard about me.
You before this interview, I know you were told, hey, this is the interview that's going to be for this movie. Here are the stars that are going to be here. Here are the actors and actresses that are coming. Here are their names. Here are their faces.
Yes.
You see them and you still actively erase this person that was in front of you.
Yeah. And like, I think the part is like, that is hurtful. Like, as much as we try to, and I really want to speak to that part because so many people think that we're just strong, but like being vulnerable, it literally can crush you.
It literally can crush you. Yeah.
It's very, and thinking about like then having to continue to engage with someone who erases you, continuing to have like to face the microaggressions and all of that, you know, while somebody's erasing you.
Yes, because at the end of the day, right, I still had to go to internship.
Yeah,
you still had to go to work.
Yep.
Like, we still have to get up and go to these places,
start to engage,
and you still have to engage because your job is on the line.
Yep.
Your grade might be on the line.
Yep.
Your livelihood is on the line. Like, all these things. So we don't get to shut it off.
Yeah.
But we still have to take care of ourselves.
Yep.
So that we can do the things that we have to do to make sure that we're going to be okay at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that's a really great transition into, so what now?
Mm-hmm.
What do we do with this? Right? Because what we've been talking about is very sad. Like,
yes,
just to be honest, like, reading that statistic as somebody who is in their fifth year and approaching, you know,
we ain't even got to the job, Mark.
Yeah,
got to a job, Mark. We're just trying to wait.
I'm in the parking lot. I'm literally in the parking lot about to enter the building, and they literally just put the
sign. You see Black women just walking out left and right. You like,
oh, I'm in the car with my lipstick, girl. Make sure my face is like my hair look good.
Like, girl, wait,
suit on,
sister.
I'm just watching. I'm in the car watching Black women leave the building.
What's up?
Where y'all going? I thought we was in the workforce.
I thought we ain't in there.
Three.
This ain't the place to be.
300,000.
300,000.
Mm-hmm. Right. Like, so all of this, and then bringing in like different intersectionalities. IOW makes bank. I'm sorry,
girl.
She does, right?
Yes, because she is eating it up on the bear.
Yeah,
you don't watch the bear. You need to watch it. She's
you do need
it
to.
But yes.
But here comes class. Not the money can't save you.
The money can't, and that's the gag. The money cannot, and I need
the money can't save you.
I need y'all to hear that. The money cannot save
the money
you.
Can't save
no matter what
you.
They try to tell us. It cannot save you.
It cannot, right? And so it's like, if the rich black girl... Anyways, right? All of this to say,
yeah.
girl, this is making the present and the future look bleak.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we do with that?
So what do we do to make it look a little less bleak?
What do we do?
And right. I think one of the things that we could do and things that we're already doing is creating spaces for Black women where you can be celebrated, where you can thrive, where you can be seen.
Yeah.
And like I said, we've been doing this.
Yeah.
This is a part of our history.
Yeah.
So I was reading Most Invisible of All, Black Women's Voluntary Associations by Anne Furore Scott.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm citing her. She is a white woman. I'm going to preface that. She is a white woman. But part of why she wrote this is because she was doing a presentation on these different organizations. And one of her colleagues called her out.
Mm-hmm.
They said, aren't you doing the same thing? Because all the Black women organizations that you kind of mentioned, they're in the footnote. They're not really a part of this main attraction that you're building it up to be. And she took that, right? And she said, you know what? You're right.
You caught me.
You
got me.
And when she wrote this, she really did a deep dive into the history of Black women's organizations, going back to when some of the enslaved had gotten their freedom.
Word.
When they were emancipated after that.
Yeah.
And how Black women hit the ground running with building organizations that could help our communities.
Yeah.
So it wasn't even just a safe space for them to go and be themselves and be free.
Yeah.
It was, okay, how are we able to now give back as a collective?
Yeah.
What can we do to support each other, whether that's providing money for food, if somebody's needing food, somebody's needing help with housing. They were being innovative in the ways that they were trying to be in community with each other and with the larger community. And something that she highlighted about these spaces, because something we know we always tend to have to do, is when we're in these spaces, we're very mindful of how we're presenting, how we hold ourselves.
Yeah.
And so some of the articles that she talked about that were built into some of these organizations.
Mm-hmm.
So one of them says, like, we promise not to ridicule or divulge the supposed or apparent infirmities of any fellow member, but to keep secret all things relating to the society, the discovery of which might tend to hurt. The discovery of which might tend to do hurt to the society or any individual. And then Article 5 was, we resolve to be charitably watchful over each other, to advise caution and admonish where we may judge there is occasion and that it may be useful. And we promise not to resent, but kindly and thankfully receive such friendly advice or reproof from any one of our members. And so what we're seeing there is even in these earlier iterations, Black women are being very cautious, because even though we are can be rendered invisible at times, we also can be rendered hyper-visible because of when we gather in community, when there are multiple Black women or we are working on issues that are important to us.
Yes.
And so it was important to them to be mindful of how we're engaging with each other, which is a whole nother topic there too. But she wanted to highlight this because it's in juxtaposition to how other organizations are able to form and exist. Because she talks about white women organizations and how they don't have to do that.
Yeah.
They don't have to really be mindful of how they're showing up when they're in community. But I also like the fifth article because it really talks about that aspect of sisterhood.
Yeah.
And really calling back to our first conversation of how in sisterhood, we can give each other feedback.
Yeah.
We can give each other feedback and that's okay. We can be charitable to each other. We can be kind to each other. But we can be mindful if we need to give feedback and how we do that. So I really like this article because she really did at her deep dive on Black women's organizations, and these Black spaces can be so important. That's what we see with the Divine Nine sororities.
Yeah.
Shout out, AKA Skiwi. but we see
not how Pinky automatically went up. Like, yes.
I'm living.
Yes.
But yes, we see how important these organizations can be to us in giving back to each other and taking care of each other and making sure that we're seen. But communities, they really serve as this space for us to be free.
Yeah.
For us to find freedom. And I even think about being able to dream in community, because there is something so different when you have spaces that are created for you. And it makes me think about something I shared with a client once. This client was a Black woman, mm-hmm. and she also has always been like this strong Black woman.
Yeah.
And the script is kind of written for you.
Yeah.
Of, okay, you know, if you want to get, you know, you want to be successful, you need to, the life has to look like this.
Yes.
Yeah. And something I asked this client, I was like, how often have you actually been able to just dream?
Yeah.
To just imagine who you want to be.
Yeah.
What you want community to look like for you, what you want life to look like for you. When have you gotten to do this?
Yeah.
She sat for a minute with it. Mm-hmm. And then she was like, I haven't. I haven't had that opportunity to dream. And so I think that that is such an important aspect of communities and sisterhood and these spaces built for Black women, that we are allowed to dream in them. We're allowed to imagine what we have yet to be given, what we have yet to reclaim, what we have yet to see.
Yeah.
You can show up and say, this doesn't have to look like this.
Yeah.
We are allowed to dream about what the future can be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that takes me back to when we first started like talking about like our plans for the future and wanting to do things together.
Uh-huh.
I remember me telling you like that was something that I struggled with too. Like I remember telling you like, girl, you and your dreams, they're so big and like you seem so sure in the fact that this is possible. Mm-hmm. And I remember telling you like, oh, that's intimidating because like I feel like I, similar to your client, like despite me like being like, oh, like I know I'm that girl, like like, oh yeah, like I'm smart and I'm this and I'm that.
Uh-huh.
I feel like there is sometimes some hesitation about, can I make this come true?
Mm-hmm.
And so being around you has definitely like inspired me to do bigger, like literally think bigger, because you dream so big. And this is not to say like you just dream, you dream and you make it happen. And I am in awe of you for that. And you like literally like not to like glaze you or nothing, but like literally like you changed my, like the way that I think about like my future, because like what if I could like make all the crazy things that I want possible, right? And so, yeah, I feel like that sticks with me. And I'm so glad that I got to get that from you and your client as well.
Thank you.
And I feel like that also makes me think, well, I love you.
Like, yeah, I was like, that I meant to say that. I said it mentally, but then I was like, mouth, follow.
Thank you. But that also makes me think about like the ways, like when you mentioned like dreaming, right? I feel like in this space of like, oh my God, things just look so terrible. I found myself turning to like Afro futurism, which it just makes me so like, I don't know, it just makes me excited.
Oh, I love it.
When you think about Afro futurism, when you think about it like in art, I think the thing that we can think the, or we can most closely tie it to, is like Black Panther, right? Reimagining, right? Kind of this country in Africa that has all this power
untouched.
And yeah, untouched. untouched, right? But Afrofuturism, and this is a definition from Yatasha Womack, who is a critically acclaimed author, filmmaker, dancer, independent scholar, and champion of humanity and the imagination. Mm-hmm. And so she writes, Afrofuturism is a way of looking at the future and alternative realities through a Black cultural lens. Mm-hmm. Black cultural lens means the people of African continent, of the African continent, in addition to the diaspora, the Americas, Europe, etc. It is an artistic aesthetic, but also a kind of method of self-liberation or self-healing. It can be a part of critical race theory, and in other respects, it's an epistemology as well. It intersects the imagination, technology, Black culture, liberation, and mysticism. Right? And so I feel like what I get from that is, like, we get to reimagine, right, what our future looks like, what we want it to look like, how can we get there, right? Mm-hmm. And then I also think about a quote from the mother, of Afrofuturism, Octavia Butler. Uh-huh. And we're thinking about like books like Kindred or Parable of the Sower, yes, where she weaves in kind of these, for her time, like very kind of weird, like novel themes for like, yes, Black literature. And so she writes, and I have to like maintain composure. Mother Octavia Butler said, I never bought into my invisibility or non-existence as a Black person. Sorry for people listening. As a female and as an African-American, I wrote myself into the world. Mm. I wrote myself into the present, the future, and the past.
The queen.
Am I supposed to be normal about a quote like that?
Girl.
Am I actually supposed to, like, are we all pretending like that was a normal thing to say?
No.
Like, that was not, I wrote myself into the world. I wrote myself into the present, future, and the past.
And the, all three of them.
I never bought into my invisibility or girl, that's the show. Mm-hmm. That is the show.
Well, at this point.
That's the show. Girl.
Because the way they were sitting there and they were like, yeah, so we don't see you. She said,
girl, bye. Literally, I'm thinking about Tim Burton talking about some. Ugh. They asked him, "Oh, why you don't ever got Black people in your show?" He was like, ugh, "I would never. I mean, that's not even. They don't even fit the vibe for it." And Octavia Butler said, "Oh, I guess I'll do it, girl. It's never.
It ain't never.
It ain't like, nothing.
It ain't nothing.
It's Nathan,
girl.
It's Nathaniel." So,
queen.
Icon.
You
ain't got no business being dead. But we remember you and we hold on to your words.
And do.
But like, I look to like Afrofuturism as like, girl, this doesn't have to be our reality.
No. And like you said, Afrofuturism really lets you dream.
Mm-hmm.
So last summer when I went to DC for the STEM Noir conference, mm-hmm, shout out STEM Noir, I love y'all. We had an opportunity to go to the, let me get the name right because I know what I want to call it.
Yes.
But let me get the name right because there is the actual name,
mm-hmm,
and the name, mm-hmm, that Black people have given.
Did you see how she took time to research? You see how she takes time to research? Learn something from this.
Look, because the National Museum of African American History and Culture, the Smithsonian,
mm-hmm,
in DC. So we got to go. And one of the things that we were like, we have to see while we're there was the Afrofuturism exhibit.
My God.
It blew my mind.
Yes.
Gorgeous. See these costumes, to see this world, these worlds, multiple,
yes,
just come to life in, yes, front of you. I can still vividly see all the,
yes,
images.
Yes.
And to see the Black Panther costume.
Hello!
I can touch it. But yes, It was, I mean, it was everything and more. And just to think about all the influences that are there, like the music, like George Clinton, like when you hear the, I'm not gonna make the noise because I don't know what I'm like an electric guitar. Like when you hear and you see it, like just to bring those worlds.
Yes.
It's amazing because you're able to step into it. You're able to imagine beyond what we're able to see.
Yes.
What they've told us that we can see, what they've told us we can do, what exists. Yes. Like these creators.
Yes.
They were like, baby, this ain't the only thing.
We literally don't have to buy into it.
You don't.
Oh my God. Like now it's making me think about like more, maybe more modern people like Solange.
Yes.
Like her recent albums, like for me are like, I feel like she uses Afrofuturism so well, like, yes, like you said, it's just a way that like they've reimagined these worlds. And I feel like it inspires me to then look around and be like, okay, what can I do? Right. Like what, this doesn't have to be my reality. Like what, like I need to dream. Like Black people, we deserve to dream so big. And it doesn't have to be, because I feel like sometimes we dream at just getting out of, you know, where we start.
Yes.
Or getting to where, you know, white society has gotten.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you, we can even go beyond that. I feel like that's what Afrofuturism talks about is, bro, like you talk about getting peace on Earth. What if we take that? What if we take that to Saturn?
Mm-hmm. What if we hop on a spaceship?
What if we take that to Mars?
Mm-hmm.
So that's immediately like what I think about and what I feel like I've been turning to when I think about, because honestly, what's going on right now, I look, you don't want a piece of it. So I'm reimagining her.
Honestly.
Don't want it.
Honestly. And it could use a good reimagining.
It could use
because we really don't even need to go back to where we were before.
Let's reimagine.
Mm-hmm.
So I think about that. When you were talking about kind of like how we've created our own spaces, I then thought about this article called Black Women, A History of Creating Our Own Spaces by Amalfi Parker Elder and Patrice Tillery, where they kind of list the history of like what it's looked like for Black women to create their own spaces so they can show up and be like their full selves, right? And not just, and they stated in the article, like not just as a woman or just as a Black person, but like both of those things and more, right? Mm-hmm. And so they talk about how, you know, when the feminist movement happened, Black women said, oh, not represented. Girl, let's go. Alice Walker said, come on, y'all. I got womanism.
Mm-hmm.
Clock it. So then we get into, you know, Black women are, you know, not represented in like different spaces to even just gather and have community. Mm-hmm. So Black women then create the National Association of Colored Women, the Neighborhood Union, the National League for the Protection of Colored Women, and the National Council of Negro Women, the Women's Political Council, the Combahee River Collective, the National Black Feminist Organization, the National Congress of Black Women, and African-American Women for Reproductive Freedom. Like, Black women get up and get to it. Like,
look, ain't no questions asked. Ain't nobody who gonna do.
They said, girl, let's go.
It's time to go. we got it.
Let's go.
We got the point.
And it's like, and this started from like the late 1800s, like where Black women came together and were like, we're not represented here. And so we are going to create our own spaces.
Uh-huh.
And so when I think about, you know, us having to deal with being erased, though it doesn't like erase, maybe erase is not the word. It doesn't negate the fact that we're being excluded or erased. It gives us a place to rest and just be and not have to perform.
Mm.
And it gives us kind of an opportunity to rest so that we can come back and be like, yeah, so it's time for me to get up in the room.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Or based in Afrofuturism, I don't even need the room. I'm going beyond that.
Ooh.
You know what I mean?
So these four walls don't contain you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
These four walls.
Mm.
Mm. Mm.
Mm. That's all you got.
No, literally. Afrofuturism said, Oh, that's it.
That's all y'all got.
Oh.
Oh, baby.
Girl, let me get up out of here. Yeah. Right. So we get to do so much more.
Yes.
And so I think of that.
Yes. I want to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're talking about these spaces for Black women mm-hmm. and creating these spaces.
Mm-hmm.
How have being a part of these Black women spaces mm-hmm. as a woman who went to Spelman College, as as a woman who is in the Black Women's Wellness Lab, how have these spaces allowed you to rest, to show up as yourself, to be present, to dream?
Yeah. I feel like starting with Spelman, like it was just me recognizing like, oh, this is a place where we can just be celebrated mm-hmm. for just being
mm-hmm.
like, you know, and despite like kind of the different ways that our identities may look different when you add on like other identities to our Black womanness, right? It was just like a place where, like, I remember walking down the halls and a Black woman gave me a crown.
Aww.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where it's like, you're just celebrated because another sister sees you and she's like, go sister. Like, oh, it reminds you. Spelman wrapped me in a blanket of love and support. Mm-hmm. And it's not to say that it's a perfect institution because nowhere it is, right?
Exactly.
But man, it put me in places to be connected with such wonderful women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think about my good friends like Jalen and Shania and Monique and Nancy. Like,
you better
oh my
god,
no, like those are my bros. And like so many other people that I've been able to connect with, like scholars like Dr. Lovett and Dr. King, who literally, like, I was sitting on the ground in like one of the buildings at Spelman, and she was just like, you should come out to like my table tomorrow. And she then became my research mentor, right? So it's like, you see how like, I just felt so seen.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mind you, I'm sitting on the ground waiting to like speak to my advisor. Like I'm outside the room just like, and I was seen sitting on the ground, not even engaging.
Mm-hmm.
So Spelman was really that place where one, I was able to be, you know, taught my history and really to be loved on. But it was just such a special place. It's just such a special place. You just are reminded that sisterhood is so valuable. So, yeah.
Yes.
And then I come into, I think Spelman then taught me, Bobby, you need to go ahead and find somewhere else that will give you that too. You can't just go back to the regular. Uh-huh. So then I found, you know, a Black Women's Wellness Lab. And then I was like, I didn't even look no further into like our school. I literally looked at the lab and I said, so I'm applying. And I feel like it's also been a place where I remain in that sisterhood
mm-hmm.
and I get to share like parts of me, and I don't have to worry about how it's going to be perceived or received. People just get it.
Yeah.
And if they don't understand, they want to understand.
Mm.
Right. People celebrate you and they push you to think bigger and to go, you know, for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just, yeah, I feel like those places are so special. And that's why I think they're so, so important.
Yeah.
You know, they're just a reminder in the world that tells me that I am not worthy and I am invisible and I don't deserve. Like Spelman and Black Women's Wellness Lab have reminded me that I do matter and my thoughts matter. Me being there, like from down to the way that I dress matters. Mm-hmm. The way that I present myself as authentic as I show up, it matters. And so it's invaluable. I genuinely think it's like one of, yeah, those are two of my favorite places.
Yes.
See you in October, Spelman.
I'm coming.
But like for you, on the flip side, like what has it meant for you coming from kind of PWIs into mm-hmm. the Black Women's Wellness Lab?
Yes. So for me, it was honestly, I would say within my PWI, I was able to really find spaces for me, spaces that affirm me. So that's where I crossed AKA in my sophomore year.
Yeah.
So being able to be there with my sisters, build those relationships. But in addition to that, we had what we call Black Baylor. And so it was really the Black community at Baylor, all our orgs, us just being together.
Yeah.
And so we were our own entity within that campus. And so even when I would go, you know, to class and I was one of the few Black students, or you walk around the campus and you're one of the few Black students until you see another one of you and you're like, hey, how you doing? But we were able to create our own spaces. And one thing I will say is we had a multicultural office. And so that was a great gathering space, being able to gather in the sub where we, where the multicultural office was, where we knew we would be. That kind of helped to create that community for us while we were there. And just shout out to them. They still got their multicultural office despite what's going on.
Thank God.
It does pay to be a private university in these times. But I would say that kind of helped set the foundation for me to really see, like, no, you need to seek out community.
Yeah.
It's important for you to seek out community. You can't just float through life. Because I would have this myth and tell myself, like, oh no, like, I've done all this by myself. I figured it all out. Like, it's me against the world. And it's like, no, it's not. You can't sustain that.
Yeah.
You need your community. There's always someone that's like behind the scenes helping, supporting. You need to be able to lean on your community and be okay with leaning on your community and being vulnerable and letting them know you need to lean on them.
Yeah.
And so I think being able to be a part of those spaces helped me to realize, okay, when I go into my PhD, this is what I need. Because after, like I shared the experience in my master's, it was not great during my internship year. And I often did feel kind of alone, like I didn't really have a lot of community there. And so when I was coming into my PhD, I was like, no, I have to be in a space where I feel like I'm affirmed, where my identity is affirmed. And so I only applied to two places under Black PIs, and Dr. Jones was one of them. The B-Well Lab was one of them. And that was my top. That was my top choice. So as soon as I got that offer, I was like, yep, I'm here. Immediately.
Oh, but that Jones call, I said, girl, go ahead.
I'm here. She was like, I mean, you don't want no time to think about it. Girl, yeah. The thought has been thunk.
At interview day, my bags were packed.
They were so packed. I was waiting on you to tell me that I could drive.
Already in tarot.
So I was just waiting on you to let me in.
Yeah.
I didn't want to barge.
I didn't want to barge in. I didn't want to be true.
But, girl, I was ready.
The answer is yes.
I don't, what do you mean?
What kind of question is that?
I've been waiting on this call. If you called me in the morning, I wouldn't wait that long.
seriously. Dr. Jones turned around. I said, let's go ahead and get into
it's
like February. I was like,
yes.
And I'm in North Texas.
You need me today?
I teleport. I'll start helping. You need me to clean up
what do you need?
How can I
let me in. Let me
in. Yeah, I'm in here. Oh, yeah. Girl, yes. Yes, but I feel that.
Yes. No, getting into the Be Well Lab and being able to be a part of this space was so important to me. It was like, no, this is what I know. This is what I need.
Yeah.
Because being in my sorority, what it taught me is no matter where I am, I have community. I can be in an airport and I get spotted, and it's the best thing for me.
Because
I'm like, oh, like, I have another soror here.
Yeah.
Or even just in the D9 in general.
Yeah.
So being able to be in that space and come into this and be like, oh, I have sisters.
Yeah.
And this is a sisterhood, and how Dr. Jones really curates the lab and how she is intentional about what she is doing.
Yes.
Is so important because she sets that foundation.
Yes.
For sisterhood, for community, for
you
us.
You kind of have to do it.
You kind of have to do it.
You can't come in and just not be a sis.
Yes. But like she's the way she sees our humanity, because I remember in that interview, by the time I got to the interview with her, it was probably around lunchtime. So the first thing Dr. Jones asked me, like, as we get in, you know, I'm nervous. I'm like, oh, I got to meet with a professor who I want. Like, I really want her to take me.
Yeah.
I need her to like me. I need to make sure that I'm on. I was like practicing all my little talking points.
Yeah.
And I had a setup of just cards in front of me for this interview. Since it was at home, I literally like taped stuff to my wall so that I could make sure I'm prepared. I'm worried about that. And the first thing she's like, have you eaten? Have you had, she's like, have you had time to like stop and eat? And I was like, yes, I did.
Yeah.
I did have lunch. I did have time to eat. And it was like, I'm so worried about all the content. And she's like, girl, no, we're people here.
Yeah.
We're people here. You are seen, you are valued, you are important. And I was just like, this is home. This is where I want to be.
Yeah.
Because the way that she's cultivated, I mean, she sets that ground, and that's everything, right?
Yeah.
Because we're able to come into that space and just take the work that the ground and the foundation that she's laid and just build off of it.
Yeah.
And so being able to be in the Be Well Lab has been such an impactful space for me, because I've been able to learn alongside y'all, grow alongside y'all. I feel like y'all push me to grow, to like, we know quant research, that is not my thing, but y'all be eating it up. And I'm like, I'm gonna get there.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get there. But but it makes me want to. It makes me want to be able to show up and do these things with y'all and exist in this space with y'all. And it's like, I gotta make sure that my game, like, I'm on my stuff. Like, I gotta be here. Like, and so these spaces, these communities are just so important for Black women. And it's my hope that, you know, Black women are able to find these spaces that pour into them, because every space for Black women is not going to be for every Black woman.
Yes.
But my hope is that each Black woman is able to find these spaces that affirm them, that pour into them.
Yes.
Even if it's going more into some of that Afrofuturism, some of the things like, I'm a big Harry Potter nerd. So I love to be able to nerd out about that. But I love to be able to nerd about that. And so being able to find these spaces where you can exercise your just vastness in who you are as a Black woman, I think is so important.
Yeah. And what you're saying reminds me of like what Bell Hooks refers to as the home place.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talk about the importance of like sisterhood and like just being able to have a place where you can, you know, recover kind of your wholeness, where you can be affirmed, and just, just be.
Mm-hmm.
So how important that is.
Yes.
And I feel like in our call to action, or like, you know, the praxis, I feel like the work isn't only on us either. Right.
Exactly.
It is so much for us to shoulder. And so I think there is a lot of work that like, people who refer to themselves as allies can do as well. And we'll link a lot of kind of resources for people who are looking to, you know, be more maybe active allies, for them to define allyship for themselves. But I think about how I was reading this kind of guide to allyship, which one, they kind of talked about like using the word ally loosely. Because Roxane Gay, in her article on Making Black Lives Matter, notes Black people do not need allies. We need people to stand up and take on the problems born of oppression as their own without remove or distance. We need people to do this, even if they cannot fully understand what it's like to be oppressed for their race, ethnicity, gender, sexuality, ability, class, religion, or other marker of identity. We need people to use common sense to figure out how to participate in social justice. So, and I agree with that, right? Like, but as a starting, I think allyship is a good starting point, and they talk about this as well. But they talk about how, like, you know, the things that you can do. So as somebody who may be kind of a non-Black woman, like, being open to listening to Black women talk about their experiences, but also just listen when Black women speak, right? Being aware of your biases, right? Doing research on how we've gotten to this point here, doing the outer work to figure out, like, how to change these oppressive systems, using your privilege to then amplify kind of suppressed voices. So when you notice that a Black woman is being silenced or being erased or is not visible, right? Using your privilege and your power for good to uplift. And I think about going back to the IO interview debacle or experience or whatever, like thinking about how you mentioned earlier, like Andrew immediately just turned for somebody else to answer the question, right? And in that, they could have, you know, immediately called it out, but also we're thinking about, like, we want to be presentable and polite and right? But allowing, like, both of them kind of, and Julia stopping herself when Ayo started to speak, and Andrew not saying anything so that Ayo was able to speak, right? So using your privilege for good. So be quiet, like being quiet and letting the voice, somebody who is, you know, being erased, someone you're watching kind of being excluded, like, use the space, take the floor, right? So thinking about ways that people who are not Black women can come in and support Black women into getting to a world where we don't even have to talk about what is the action, right? What should we do about this? How can we, you know what I mean? Like, support Black women, because it's not just Black women's jobs to make the world a better place for them and everyone else. So thinking about the ways that you yourself can show up and start as an ally, right? Using your power to kind of disrupt and challenge these structures that are actively oppressing Black women, that are actively rendering Black women invisible. Thinking about the ways that you in your life, right? You may not be somebody who you feel has a lot of power. A lot of times when we think about power, we think, well, I don't got, you know, I'm not a CEO. I'm not this and that and the whore. Girl, when you go to the grocery store, and the clerk is being a little nasty to the Black woman in front of you, what about your friend that maybe your parents make weird comments about? What about when your friends say weird things about other groups of people? There are small ways that you can use your power and your privilege to challenge. And that those are small, tangible things that you can do to work towards social justice. And so I encourage you guys to engage with the research, to engage with, you know, the articles and just the works that talk about challenging and using what you have to make the world a better place. It's not up to Black women to do it on their own. So, yeah.
Well said.
Do you feel like you've said all you had to say?
I do. What about you?
I have.
Okay.
Hey. And so, transitioning a little bit more.
Yes.
What's your tea? Can we help you with a theory? Send your tea through our email, tntheorypodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on all of our socials at tntheorypodcast. We look forward to hearing from you. Yes. And as always, at the end of every episode, Quenisha will lead us in a brief meditation. Some words of affirmation.
Yes. So, as always, I will invite you to, if you are comfortable, close your eyes. If not, just allow your gaze to soften. Find a comfortable position. Maybe you want to lay down. Maybe you want to sit with your feet flat and your back straight. Whatever's most comfortable for you. But I want you to take this time. Start to notice your breath. Taking deep breaths, expanding your diaphragm, making sure you're breathing deep into your belly and taking slow, long exhales out. Continuing with that pattern. I want you to know that even in a world that may not see us, that may want to hide us, that may want to silence us, you are so important. You are seen, you are valued, and you are heard. Even if the world doesn't want you to be, even if the world tells you that your being is not enough, you are always enough. I want to leave you with these affirmations. I deserve to live my life out loud. I deserve to live my life out loud. I deserve to take up space. I deserve to take up space. And I'm never alone. I am surrounded by genuine community. I am never alone. I am surrounded by genuine community. Allow those affirmations to reverberate through your mind. Allow them to sink in, settle in, and really take up space. When you're ready, you can begin to bring slow movements back to your body, wiggling your fingers, wiggling your toes, and coming back into this present moment here with us on the couch. We are so glad, as always, that you joined us for episode 3. We're glad that we were able to have this conversation, and we love having it with you. So we are so excited to see y'all in our next episode. Yeah, bye! Won't you come in? Say you.